Thank you, Steve. Hi, everybody. Welcome to Friday. I'm Bill Leff. I'm normally here. You know me.
Yes.
But Dane Neal is filling in for Wendy, so please adjust your seats. I don't know what that means.
Adjust your sets.
Adjust your sets and your seats. Anything that needs adjusting, this would be a great time to adjust it because Dane Neal is here filling in for Wendy. Hello, Dane.
Hello. And nice if you're watching in the video feed, you can. There's probably some sort of a blur button. You could blur it
yes.
up, close your eyes a little bit, and
yes.
imagine that I'm just Wendy with a cold.
Right. That's what I do. Why wouldn't all the listeners do that? Moments ago, Bob Saget was in the studio, and a couple of times in my life, I've had the opportunity to meet a celebrity and then relay one of my favorite stories about that celebrity to them.
I love those.
Only
yes.
to have them tell me they have no idea what I'm talking about.
Or even worse, one thing is like, hey, you know what? I meet a lot of people that I remember. Or even worse,
yes.
no, that didn't happen.
Right. All right. So here is my version. Here's my story about him and that happening. Years ago, Tom Snyder, who to this day is still one of my all-time favorite interviewers from The Tomorrow Show.
And for the listeners out there that haven't, a mental picture, imagine like a table and just a smoke-filled room.
Yes.
Insightful
yes.
questions.
Yes. For years on NBC, I hope people will know and remember him and love him as much as I did, because, boy, Tom Snyder just did everything right, in my opinion, when he was hosting a show. So he was the host of The Tomorrow Show, and to your point, that's exactly what it was. It was a rudimentary, very, very basic set of just a table and an ashtray
right.
and a chair or two, depending on how many guests he had, and Tom would sit and chain smoke and
yes.
ask really great questions.
Yeah.
And you got the feeling that you knew that whoever he was interviewing, you knew a little bit more about them when his interview was over.
The interesting thing about it is when you see it now, you'll be drawn to the smoking part that looks different.
Yes.
But that was just such a part of a kind of Americana
yes.
or just the world that it was invisible. You
Correct.
Didn't even notice that was going on.
It just blended right in. You're right. So in addition to him having The Tomorrow Show, for a while, he also had a radio show, a syndicated radio show at night, and it was really good. And a lot of times, I was doing stand-up at the time, when I was driving back from the club, that was my hour, was listening to his radio show. It was fantastic.
Nice.
I loved it.
Yep.
So one night, much like his television show, the way Tom Snyder's radio show was structured was, it was a series of guests. Sometimes you'd have one guest on for the entire hour, but more times than not, it was two or three guests in segments. So his first guest was a woman from a club called the Betty Foundation, and her name was Betty.
Not Betty Ford, right?
Nope, it was not Betty Ford. Her name was Betty, and the only thing that she had in common with everybody else in this group was that they were all named Betty, and that was it. So they would have this convention of people named Betty, and they would talk about what it was like to have that name. They would honor famous people named Betty.
Nice.
Like
Betty Grable?
Betty Rubble.
Betty Rubble.
Right?
famous animated second banana.
Right. They would bemoan the fact that there weren't many Bettys coming down the pike,
right.
that the name Betty was kind of dated. And Tom Snyder ran out of questions for Betty about 2 minutes in.
So, you know? Betty, your thoughts.
Right. There was nothing to do with that. I mean, really. So he talked to her for about 10 or 15 minutes, and we got to know her.
Yeah.
And then his next guest was Bob Saget, and Bob Saget insisted that he, Tom Snyder, only refer to him as Betty for the interview, and no matter what Tom Snyder asked him, Bob Saget's answers were filled with Bettyisms. And it made Tom Snyder very angry.
Oh, no.
He was not playing along. I couldn't stop laughing because I thought, boy, this Bob Saget, when he commits, he commits. He will not let it go. And he didn't let it go. He just kept doing it. And it made Tom Snyder more and more frustrated. And it made me laugh harder and harder and harder. And I just went, boy, if I ever get to meet Bob Saget, I probably won't. But I'm going to tell him that that was one of the funniest things I'd ever heard. So then cut to several years ago.
And it couldn't have been planned, right? It had to just be thought up on the fly.
Right off the top of his head.
And again, for the list, this was a great opportunity. This was a huge personality, a huge show, a huge opportunity.
Yes.
It wasn't, though, it's like, well, let's just screw around.
Right. No.
Right?
Right. Everything said is true. So I told Bob the story, and he's nodding throughout the story, and he goes, I don't remember a bit of that. And I go, no, believe me, it happened. He goes, I'm not doubting that it happened. I just don't remember it. And I kept thinking, how sad that something can be that outrageously funny, to me anyway. I'm sure a lot of people would have been irritated with him, including Tom Snyder.
Yes.
Who was very irritated with him. But it was sad to me that you could create something that was that memorable that all those years later I still thought it was brilliant, and he just didn't have any recollection of it at all.
Well, I think that's the gift that you have, Bill, is that you're able to not only remember that, keep it, cherish it, right, if you will, right, and then share it back. And so now maybe he'll remember the retelling of
it. Oh, maybe.
Yeah, it was great, maybe. Wasn't I?
Well, I was tempted to bring it up with him again, but I went, I struck story. Out once. I don't want to, do I need to strike out a second time with it?
Yep, don't remember. And I don't remember you telling me right. the other time either.
Right. Yeah, that would have been piling on. You know, who needed that? All right, there's a lot going on today's show. I want to talk about, when we come back, I want to talk about vaping. There have been two big stories about vaping in the last 24 hours since we last did the show. Two big stories about vaping, so I want to get into that.
See, a modern-day Tom Snyder would be vaping.
Oh, yeah,
chain instead vaping.
Of smoking. Right. And he would require each of his guests, Betty is included, to vape along with him during the show. I'm positive of that. All right, so we'll talk about that. A friend of mine from college, David Cromer, who we had on a couple of months ago, Tony Award-winning director on your Broadway, on your Great White Way there in New York. He has a new show that's opening in town, so we'll talk to David Cromer for a bit. Alexander Zelbin comes by every Friday. We talk to him on the phone every Friday to find out what's going on in the world of television. And also Jerry Nunn, who does a segment with us during our bonus hour, will join us during the bonus hour to tell us what's going on in town this month.
Second to none.
Second to none is Jerry Nunn.
None better than Jerry
yes,
Nunn.
Yes, so true. Everything you said is true. All right, we'll take a break, and then there's a lot more show. Stick around. It's Bill and Dane in for Wendy on WGN. Just want to read a quick text. Hi, everybody. It's me, Bill. And that's Dane. Wendy's off today. My husband, this is a text from 630. Probably just one person in 630, though, Dane. I'm guessing the whole area code didn't contribute to this text, but I could be wrong.
They're kind of a clicky bunch.
Right. They do hang together. You're right. My husband worked in a banquet hall for years, and it was the home of the Lois Club meetings. Lois, L-O-I-S, which I'm guessing is for people who, for obvious reasons, couldn't get into the Betty Foundation. So
right.
they said, you know what? Yep. We'll form our own club. We don't need you.
National Group of the Larrys. You know, I'm sure there's a group for a lot of people where you have a couple prominent members that say, you know what? Hey, we need to get do a little bite at the apple.
Yes.
Our recognition. I'm sure you could build a loyalty rewards program.
I'm sure of that.
And then you've got to just vet to make sure that you don't have any people pretending to be Lois's with false
identity. No, you have to do a heavy background check, that's I would right. imagine. I'm trying to think of how you fill the time if you have a club where the only thing everyone has in common is that they have the same name. Is that enough?
It's a great point, Bill, because you think one of the great interviewers of all time, Tom Snyder, runs out of questions because really there aren't any.
Right.
So what do they have to talk about?
I don't know.
Geez, it's great to be Lois. Yeah. Same to you, Lois. You know, and then we're like, hey, we're done.
Right.
You know, maybe then it's like plan a trip right. to the casino or I don't know, play some trivia game. I'm not sure what you do.
I understand groups that get together because they have a similar love in common. Like, they all have a similar hobby or a similar job. You
like
know, that makes
like Elvis
sense.
Fans or
yes.
fans of, like, the, you know, the Ford Mustang.
Yes.
You know, you get around. Isn't the Mustang great? Because think about this. Just as you mentioned the diversity of the 630.
Yes.
The diversity of the Loises is probably similar, that not all Loises, although your Zodiac people would like to say that everyone in this, you know, month and a half period
yeah.
is identical.
Yes.
A lot of these Loises are probably somewhat different. And maybe some of those Loises you may not like.
Right.
Like, I'm
right.
starting to dislike my own Loisness because I hate you.
Sure. There's something to that. Do you remember, and I guess they still do this, they have this big twins convention in Minneapolis, St. Paul, because it is the Twin Cities, so why wouldn't you have it in Minneapolis, St. Paul?
It's a bummer. That's
but they always show it on the news, and you think to yourself, Is that enough? Is just being twins enough to have a 3-day event where you all get together and go, yeah, we're twins. Are you? You're also twins. And those guys are twins. Hey, we're all twins.
I think for one of the main sponsors, the Matching Outfit Society, they are probably...
Well, that's a big part. You know that's a huge part of it.
We got two.
And they always show one couple of twins, one pair of twins, two girls that met other twins that are guys, and they got married, and that's always like a big thing. They always show that too.
It's just convenient, you know, to have things, and I guess I'm in common, right?
Yes.
Including like your own genetic profile with your, you know, brother-in-law.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. I guess now that's a little bit different. There's a little more to talk about there, I guess, and be excited about than the Loises.
I mean, not much more,
I have
but
never
slightly more.
Been to the one, they probably better put on a good meeting, but
I'm positive they do.
Yeah, but you'd think at some point it's like, okay, we get it. We're twins.
Right. Now what do we do?
Now what do we do?
When we found out, when my wife and I found out we were having twins, the first thing I said to my wife was,
gotta sign them up for the club.
Go to that convention in Minneapolis, St. Paul. Right. Please. Please.
Well, you never know. Just like maybe like AARP or AAA, maybe there's a really great kind of club that you can get into if you're a twin.
Sure.
And there's some discounts.
I'm positive there's discounts. Double mint gum, probably.
Anything.
All right. I wanted to bring this up because, as I mentioned earlier, there have been two stories in the last 24 hours about vaping. Story number one is this. The city of Milwaukee has urged everyone who lives there to stop vaping immediately, which is an interesting stance because their take on this is that vaping or dabbing, same thing, I'm guessing, because it says taping or vaping or dabbing, is obviously some sort of a health risk. So the city has just come right out and said point blank, we'd really appreciate it if you would just quit it. Just stop it. It's not good for you. Don't do it.
This is,
would anybody stop because the city asked you to stop? If you're into this, and I don't understand the attraction of it at all. There's no part of me that gets it. I've watched people do it, and I go, how in the world could that be enjoyable?
Well, I think it's been sort of billed and presented as the healthy alternative to traditionally and verifiably, you know, negative smoking,
right?
You know, so
it's being sold as that, right? It's being sold as
the healthy alternative.
If you have a problem smoking, this is better, and I guess it's better, but I don't think it's a whole lot better, is it?
I wouldn't say if you have a problem smoking. Well, maybe a little bit of that, but if you have if you enjoy the lifestyle and pleasure of smoking,
yeah,
this is a way to go ahead and do it, and you can build some flavors in, and it's supposedly just water vapor, and it's not necessarily bad for you. When you mentioned the city said it's obviously somehow bad for you, that's kind of, it's like, well, we don't know what is really, we don't know exactly.
Jury's still out on how good or bad it is, bad it is.
As it's kind of a weird thing for the city to do. I think it's important to reference because the city, there's so many businesses, that's probably a certain percentage of what it is that they sell or their profit or the bottom line, right? That they sell these products.
Without a doubt.
And they're saying, don't use that product. It would be like if a city came out and said, don't buy any product.
You know,
somebody would be like, what are you doing?
Right. You can't tell us not to buy
it. It's not illegal.
We'll buy more. Right. The other story, and we'll tie it in. I mean, the obvious tie-in is that they're both about vaping. High school students say that 20% of their peers, 1 in 5, are vaping, some of those kids as young as 8th grade. And my guess is probably some even younger than that. The story says 8th grade. So here's the question I throw out to you, Dane, and anybody listening. 312-981-7200. Do you think that we as human beings need something in our lives that we know is bad for us? Because there's no doubt about it. Smoking's bad for you. Jury's out. It's done. We know it. It's bad. Vaping, not that great for you. Maybe slightly better than smoking, but not a whole lot better than smoking.
And maybe not.
Do you think, though, that we just, as a group, as a society, need something that we go, yeah, it's bad for us, but that makes me a cooler person somehow, to look death in the face and go, I don't care. I'm doing it anyway.
When you say, do we need something that, and then you can kind of fill in the rest of the blank. And I think there's a lot of different ways to be cool or to look cool. People, you know, get, whether it's like tattoos or the style of music you listen, or whatever's cool to certain people. You know, being a big nerd is really cool too, you know, in some circles. So, so I think there's a lot of different ways to go ahead and kind of, you know, just show that you're pretty cool. I think that it's the need for, you know, certain segments of society to create these addictive things that can sort of get people kind of hooked on stuff. It's just like your drug dealer 101 sort of model. Mm-hmm. Same with cigarettes, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's something that's mainstream and it's something that's legal. And we talked a little bit about it before we went on the air, is that with a lot of these stuffs, whether it's the opioid situation or whether it's any of these kind of things, society's ability to say, hey, you know, this is bad for you, or we should put some laws in place or restrictions or pull it off the market is so reactive that you're 2 years in before we realize that vaping may be even worse than cigarettes.
Right. You know? So when a company, the biggest company doing this is Juul, right? They're the leaders.
And not the Juuls. Not our grocery store.
Not the grocery store Juul. No. They wouldn't hurt you.
They would never.
They're here for you. No. They're not going to hurt you.
They got that Chicken Monday deal. It's pretty good.
But now they say we're not targeting kids this young. We don't want them. Just the opposite. We want them when they're older. We don't want them when they're younger. But they're lying. That's not true.
You can say what you
they
can
want
say
sales
made for adults. And you know what? If you see the older kids doing it, you know, the younger kids are going to look up to them and see them. And just like Joe Camel was an animated character having right. fun and out there kind of attractive to kids. And you've got flavors that are the same kind of flavors that they have for the candy. You know, you've got.
So when you have bubblegum flavored yes. vaping, right? And cream de mint flavored vaping.
That's not for your discriminating palate.
Right.
Right. That's for kids.
They're shooting for kids. They're yes. shooting for high school kids.
Yep.
Right?
Sure.
So how hypocritical is that to say, no, believe us. We want you to do this when you're older and more responsible. But they love the fact that they're selling their product. They don't care who's buying it.
And I don't know what kind of legislative body can sit there and say, well, we hear what you're saying, but here's what it really means and here's what it really does. Because even with smoking, they try to, you know, there was a study that said that you know, once you start smoking, you're kind of hooked for X amount of years before yeah. maybe your judgment or your maturity gets to a point where, or your willpower,
yeah.
you get to a point where you decide, hey, this is a car payment. You know, it's very expensive these days to go ahead and smoke, but they figure they've got you for that period of time. And you know, we all have relatives that smoked. They started when they were in high school to be cool or right. whatever, and then you get hooked, and then it takes you maybe 15-20 years before you decide that you got ahead, you get rid of it. So they can say that, but the whole idea, I think the goal is to get kids to get hooked on it, and then you've got that sort of like profit zone of that X amount of years before they quit.
But what happens that first time when you know, okay, so you're a kid, and it's been a while since I was a kid. It's been
a little.
It has been. But I'm trying to remember, like, when you're on the fence about stuff like that, what kicks it in? What do you say to yourself where you go, well, I can do this every once in a while, and it's not going to hurt me?
Well, I mean, I've got some real cigarette stories. Well, see, now, think about this, Bill. So when I was a kid, and probably when you were a kid, too, cigarettes were pretty reasonable. It wasn't expensive.
Yeah.
Society wasn't necessarily up to speed. But you knew
they were dangerous.
You knew they were bad for you, and there was a thing that said the Surgeon General said it was bad, but you could right. still, and I think it was 16, is you could still get cigarettes, and I don't think that anybody really enforced it. It was right. one of those things you could go to the gas station
right.
and you could just go buy cigarettes.
You and could now, say they were for your dad or your grandparents, and they would sell them to you.
Well, I remember even, and they actually were, so I wasn't like an 8-year-old trying to, but you could go to the store with a note saying, my mom needs these cigarettes,
right.
give them to the kid, and they right. would do that. Just a different...
Signed Dane's mom.
Just a different world.
At the bottom.
So a kid could actually afford a relatively robust cigarette habit, where now it's actually very expensive. And so now, you know, it's one of the things where you'd really have to factor in... like a budget and all.
So is that why a high school kid now is choosing vaping over smoking? Is it because of the cost?
I think for a lot of reasons. Mission accomplished on the public information campaigns that cigarettes are bad for you, because
yeah.
we saw those rates drop and drop and drop, and people
yeah.
got it, that it wasn't cool, it's smell, you know, all the negative things about cigarettes. And then of course you build in the
expense. But how have we regressed then to where vaping is the new smoking, and everybody's just like, well, we can do this though, let's put the cigarettes aside, but we can still vape, that's fine.
I think it's more that it's cool as far as the gadgets, they look cool, you have flavors that are appealing, you have scents that are appealing,
yeah.
it's not all those negative horrible things that people didn't like, the downside
yeah.
of smoking
yeah.
just aren't there. Here's the thing that is there though, it's I guess incredibly addictive. What you don't have on the smoke side with the negative health effects as far as the nicotine, it's still there. And in fact, you know, they say that they're having multi times over more nicotine that they're actually ingesting into their system, just because it's such
right.
a kind of a passive way to do it.
So knowing this, is that going to curtail it at all or not at all?
I think it's going to take whatever the negative health effects are going to have. They're going to ramp up these studies.
Mm-hmm.
They have to come out. If for Milwaukee to do this, and I haven't got a chance to read the report yet, but there's got to be a reason behind it. It can't just be like, hey, because for a city to do, it's one thing for an activist to come out
right.
and say, like, I'm against things that are bad.
Yeah, I don't remember a city ever doing something like that.
For a city to say, like, we're not exactly sure, but beware
yeah.
and maybe don't do this is,
yep.
I think, powerful.
Yep. Steve, thanks very much. It's Bill Leff and Dane Neal. Dane is sitting in for Wendy. Wendy will be back on Tuesday. We're both off on Monday, but Wendy will be back with me on Tuesday. Two big stories involving vaping have come out in the last 24 hours. One is a survey where they talk to high school students who say that 20% of the kids that they go to school with, 20% of their peers, are now vaping. That's one in five. The other story is that the city of Milwaukee is urging everybody who lives there to stop vaping immediately. They talk about the health risks. So a couple of angles on this, but let's go to the phones first and talk to Pam. Pam, you're on WGN. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, first of all, I have a brother that lives in Waukegan. But back to the initial call and why I called
yes.
was a lot of those, the first 12 in Waukegan,
The first 12? Oh, did we lose her?
All right,
let's put her on hold for a little bit and see if we can find her again. I'm not sure what the first 12 refers to, but it sounds biblical.
But she mentions the first in some of these the situations, and we've talked about it, is that the jury's still out. We don't know exactly what it is, but now we're starting to see, outside of whatever things people think are positive about, that there's negative health things. They're calling it lung illness, and I guess the first person died from vape-related lung illness, died last week. 193 cases of lung illness have been reported in 22 states, and a number that's growing fast. So now we're starting to see these people that thought, hey, this is the healthy alternative,
right?
That it could be, as crazy as it sounds, even worse than smoking.
Ernie works here at WGN. Ernie, for the purposes of being on air, we will not use your real name. What name would you like to use?
Vander Sloganstein.
Lois or Betty?
I think Lois or Betty are both available if you want those, Ernie. Ernie, you have a personal story about one of your own children and vaping. How does this play out?
I am actually begging my daughter, my older daughter, and her boyfriend to stop vaping. And it's not always, for people out there, it's not always just nicotine that they're vaping. You know, these teens tend to vape marijuana as well because it's easy to hide. You can't see it. You walk down the street, you can blow it out in the air, no one knows. You smoke a joint, it's very pervasive. You can smell it everywhere. It's on you.
Right.
You can vape anywhere. There was a White Sox game the other day. Kid blew out a huge vape.
But you're not supposed to be sitting at a baseball game and vaping, but somehow you get away with it.
You get away with it because it doesn't smell like a cigarette. It doesn't smell like marijuana. It actually smells good. You ever walk through a vape cloud, you're like, ooh.
It's like raspberry or whatever.
I mean, they have 100, my daughter has 100 different tastes, and I've tasted them, and they taste good. They smell good. But
what's your fear then?
I just fear they're going to die like this kid. Yeah. She's been vaping now a couple of years. I beg her and her boyfriend all the time, please just stop. If it is marijuana you want to do, just become an old hippie and, you know,
right,
do something like that. But the vaping is, you know, what you didn't know 10 years ago, you now see, and it's becoming prevalent.
Well, they mentioned things like popcorn lung. It says the initial symptoms of chemical pneumonia, because they're still struggling to kind of name the things, right? Lung illness.
I wonder how long it's been around that they didn't know what they were looking at.
Right.
Yeah, they would attribute it to something else. And like you said, it's not something that comes across, obviously, so the kids are probably not saying, oh, this is why. It's a cough, shortness of breath, fatigue, fever. It can present more severe symptoms, too, like anorexia, chest pains that worsen the days leading up to hospitalization, the health officials say. So they know, and this is the common denominator, is the vaping, and it's the kind of thing that, and here's these companies that create all this stuff. Like I said, all the things that you can do to kind of counteract it are retroactive years down the road, but now we're starting to see it, right?
So when marijuana is legalized next year, right, how will this affect the vaping?
You're going to see a lot of people vaping marijuana, and you're going to be able to go get the oils. You're going to be able to get it. And I mean, they have things now you can dab on the cigarettes. You can, it's just an oil pack, and you can dab it on anything. You can dab it on food. You can dab it on, you see how CBD oil is becoming very prevalent, and it is helpful. Well, they're doing the same thing with marijuana. I mean, everything that you can get in CBD form, you can get in the marijuana form.
It's available.
Yeah, it's available. Now, with it becoming legal, you're going to have kids sitting outside just like you did when we were young, maybe, and ask somebody to get you a six-pack. You're going to have kids sitting outside these stores asking to get you a bag.
Really?
I mean, just like Joe Camel was sort of the thing that was attractive to kids that drew people in, and Ernie just mentioned some of the different flavors, the different fun flavors, you know, bubblegum,
you can make it taste like
cotton candy.
Right.
That is, I think, that's the modern-day equivalent to, you know, to Joe Camel.
Yeah.
So when a city like Milwaukee takes a stance and asks its residents to please stop vaping, we don't think it's good for you, please stop vaping, it's the equivalent of when they used to do those Say No to Drugs commercials and people using drugs would go, all
this
right.
This is your lungs on drugs.
Nancy Reagan asked me to stop using drugs, so I guess I'll stop using drugs. It's not going to have an impact, is it?
No, I don't think so. And I want to say another thing. You said 1 in 4 high school kids?
1 in 5, they were saying 20%.
I would bet it's more than that.
Higher than that?
I would bet it's more than that. 100%.
Who told? Oh, you weren't here, Dane. It was Wendy and myself. Somebody said that some high school had a vaping lounge. It's a high school that just said, well, you can't beat the problem, so we might as well help the kids, give them a safe place to vape.
How crazy is that? So when at one of the high schools I went to, there was a smoking lounge for the kids. And the I think the thought process was better than having you walking out onto the busy traffic corner or across the street or whatever. And so they had sort of a chain link fence in there where kids that were 16, you could smoke cigarettes. And that was,
I just can't condone something that unhealthy. I mean, maybe back then we are a little bit older. Maybe it was okay, but now knowing what you know.
And well, but it sounds crazy
now. It does sound crazy. But we also had like XP in high school where the kids, they as we called the burnouts, and I put my fingers up in the air. Yeah. They kind of just sat up there and played video games the whole time and got grades for it.
What does XP stand for? What does that mean?
Experimental program, I believe.
Yeah.
If anyone from Oak Park, and I'm wrong, please call in. It was literally, they had a section of like the third floor, and they kind of just went in there and played games.
But it's a major now. People can play video games and get scholarships.
These kids are making millions.
So is the school giving in when they have a smoking lounge or a vaping lounge? It's just their way of saying we can't win.
Okay, we quit.
Right.
Yeah. Well, and if there hadn't been verified, provable, you know, negative things going along with it, maybe it's just kind of to get along, right, to keep them there. But now we have it, right? This is the first vape-related lung illness death came last week, and an Illinois man died from lung problems linked to his e-cigarette use.
It's probably the first reported.
Yeah, well, probably, right? Where they're able to, like, put it all together.
Yeah. So can parents now use this?
I hope.
I'm trying to think if a kid hears this, if it really has much impact, or will a kid say, it's a numbers game. Look at all the people using it who have not died.
I started giving my daughter and making her read up on it and giving her, you know, stats and stuff like that. And it seems to be working with her. I don't see her doing it as much anymore, I hope. But again, she'll be 20 years old soon. She's in college. I can't, you know, when she leaves my house in her car, I can't stop her from doing whatever she does. So I just try and arm her with the knowledge.
Yes.
Bad.
Smart move.
People are dying. Please don't be the one to die.
And just like there's so many things out there in society that we just accept that later on we find out whether it's asbestos or any of those that just are part of
starts out wonderful.
It's everything fine. And then all of a sudden it's like, whoa.
Yeah.
You know? And I think that's where we're at.
Ernie, not your real name, but it is your real name.
Slagen Weinstein.
Right, that's your real name. Thanks, Ernie. We'll take a quick break and then more of us. Bill and Dane in for Wendy on WGN. It's Bill Leff. It's Dane Neal. Dane is sitting in for Wendy. Wendy has today off and Monday off. I'll also be off on Monday, but she'll be in on Tuesday along with me. You're working this weekend, right? You're here on the station on this weekend, right?
I did Wednesday. I don't think so. I think the first Northwestern game is on during my normal time slot, so I'll be relaxing, enjoying that. But I will be on, I think, Sunday at 5 p.m. on NBC Sports Chicago with the whole focused, you know, the show about the barbecue smokedown and competition barbecue, and that's going to come on NBC Sports Chicago 5 p.m. on Sunday.
Are you nervous? Well, you've already taped it. There's no reason to be nervous.
Yeah, and I've seen some of it. It's really super well produced. These are the same guys that do ESPN 30 for 30, this program new to our market, but airs a lot on the East Coast, all around the country, 90 million households, and so it should be cool. There's a lot of fun barbecue stuff, and it's a pretty show to look at. They did some really great graphics.
It's in color?
Yeah.
That's exciting.
Parts of it.
That's very
exciting. Parts of it are in color.
Where available? Some places may not be set up for the color.
It depends on your television.
Right.
Traditionally, listeners, if you have a black and white television, it's still going to be in color.
We're going to watch it on the Philco, the old Philco. Will that be in color? Do you know?
Yeah, you just dial it in there.
We'll figure it out. Last night, my wife and I went to see Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, which I wanted to see, like, as soon as I heard they were making it. I liked everything about it. I liked the storyline. I liked the director. I liked the cast. We went to see it. Have you seen it or not seen it yet?
I've done segments on it. I have not seen it yet.
Oh, really?
But I know a little bit about it.
Yeah. Right? Here's what I found the most interesting about the movie, and I don't know if everyone's picking up on this or I just picked up on it. For people who don't know the storyline, it's about an actor who's kind of getting a little bit past his prime, Leonardo DiCaprio, who's playing the actor, and his friend who is his stuntman, played by Brad Pitt. And I don't want to go into too many specifics, but they have they live in a neighborhood that has some other famous people. Is that saying too much or not enough?
I know Bruce Lee's in it.
Bruce Lee is in it for a little bit, or an actor playing Bruce
Lee. Right.
Roman Polanski, Sharon Tate, Chuck Manson.
Chuck.
Charlie. So the thing that I found most interesting, and I don't know why this would be the one thing that would stand out about a 2-hour and 44-minute movie, but usually when you see a movie that's a period piece that's about a specific time and place, what furthers the story along is the music. And they use music. It takes place in 1969, so they use music of the era without a doubt, But what I found very interesting about the movie was, in addition to the music, most of the storyline is carried anytime anybody's in a car or in a place, the radio is on. Ooh. And there's commercials going, not so much the songs of the era,
right,
but you're hearing commercials from 1969.
Like Mop and Glow, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, that sounds, you know what, as kind of a geek for that kind of stuff, that sounds really, really cool.
That was a nice bonus, and it's real subtle. There's not a lot of fanfare about that part of it, but I thought, yeah, that also puts you in the mindset of 1969 to hear all those commercials for products, some of which don't even exist anymore.
Well, when you think of even our iconic commercials here in the Chicago, you hear like a Burt Wyman Ford.
Right.
I mean, it really takes you back,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's very nostalgic. So I gave Quentin Tarantino high marks. I didn't love the movie. I thought the movie was good. I didn't think it was among his best. That he's done a better job of capturing certain stories better than this one. It was entertaining, and people always say, boy, who can sit through a movie that's almost 3 hours long? That wasn't an issue at all. If the movie's good, I don't care how long it is, right?
Chuck Manson, known, of course, for certain activities and gratuitous violence as part of Quentin Tarantino's kind of thing. Did he kind of use that as the vehicle for that element of his kind of movie making, or did he do other things? Was there some big shootouts and everything?
In almost every one of his movies, there comes a time in the storyline where things get a bit violent.
Things get crazy.
And you knew that was coming, and I was sitting next to my wife, who during those scenes couldn't even it gets pretty graphic at a certain time in the movie. So she couldn't even look at the screen anymore because he really plays it to the hilt. And if you've seen any of his movies, you know exactly what I'm talking about. He goes out of his way to make the violence very, very, not even real, super real.
A little theatrical.
Yes.
I mean, it's.
Yes. That's part of the fanfare of his movies. And I looked at Terry twice during the movie, and she was not even looking at the screen anymore because it was so brutal. But there's not, to his credit, there's not a lot of that in this movie. But during certain payoff scenes,
I mean, I think if you're a fan of his work, you look for the great dialogue, you look for great actors doing just the music, just the way that he cuts everything, and then of course there's, you know, a lot of things getting exploded, people getting exploded, you name it, it's happening.
There's that. Now, the Bruce Lee bit that you referred to earlier, I'm sure you're aware of this. Bruce Lee's daughter is not happy at all with the portrayal of her father, her late father, in this movie. They make him out to be a pretty jerky character. He's very proud of his own skills, and he's just not a good guy. And I don't know who would see the movie and think to themselves, well, I guess since he's being portrayed like that in a movie, he must be like that. There's no doubt Bruce Lee must have been a jerk because I just watched him in a movie for 9 minutes and he was a jerk. But I don't know who would think that.
Well, you would
just think to further the storyline, it made sense for his character to be a jerk in that, you know.
And I'm sure as everybody, I think we've all, if we're honest with ourselves, at some moments, any 9 minute period throughout our lives could have been jerky.
Right, sure.
You know, and then you hope, I guess, just with Bruce Lee, especially if you're a family member, that his impact and his personality and all of that stuff on the kind of the American lexicon, like, goes beyond whatever portrayal he made. If he was completely unknown and like, that's not my dad.
Right.
You got it all wrong. I mean, there's a lot more Bruce Lee to go around.
Right. The guy who plays him, I don't know who the actor is who plays him, but he does a really good job. He looks like him. He sounds like him. He moves like him. There's several people. Like in any Tarantino movie, what he does is he takes real characters from the era and he mixes them in with characters that don't exist. Like the main characters in this movie are kind of
made up.
Completely made up, right? But they're centered around other actors of the time. There's a part where, this isn't giving anything major away, believe me, but because he's a stuntman, because one's an actor and one's a stuntman, they're constantly in either TV shows or movies that actually existed in 1969, you know? So there's a part where Steve McQueen is at a party with these characters.
Nice.
And it's Damian Lewis, who used to be on Homeland, and he's in the show Millions.
Okay.
You know, I don't know if you know who he is. I hope people know who he is. But he plays Steve McQueen, and he's so good, you think you're watching Steve McQueen again. So there's so much like that in the movie that really is really great.
Yeah, that sounds
cool. And I think because Tarantino is such a fan of that era, he goes out of his way to replicate to the smallest detail. So for that part of it, I give him high marks, but then the overall storyline, and then there's also the fact that he takes events that happened and then he puts his own spin on them. And then when you're watching, you go, I wonder why he just didn't play it more honestly. Like, what happened with Charles Manson and his disciples back then is a really interesting story. So why change it? Why make it a story that didn't happen?
Well, you wonder what they're, and whether it's Quentin Tarantino or other people who do these period pieces, and you wonder if it's just that they don't know, or if they just decide this is an interesting way to say it, or they just assume everyone knows the real story.
Right.
So they'll just appreciate my little left turn here.
Yeah.
You know, you wonder, there's some things that come up where it's later on, you know, that was a little before kind of my time as far as all of the stuff that they were watching and doing and everything, but the personalities, you certainly know them. But some of these that come that show a time period that's a little bit later, like in the 80s or something, you're like, wait a minute, that's not the way it
right close but yeah. not exactly
you
close.
Can tell they're trying right. but it's like no
right. But overall, I would say to anybody who's thinking about seeing the movie, see the movie. It's a very entertaining movie. I was hoping for just a little bit more, and because he's made movies that are so great, there's a couple movies he's been involved with that are just so great.
What's your favorite one or two?
Well, Pulp Fiction for sure.
Yeah, that's a great one. Oh my gosh.
And then there's several others. He did one The Hateful Eight was out about 2 years ago, which it didn't get great reviews, but I thought that was a really, really good movie. Good story.
Yep.
Everything was there.
Well, you see him moving along where he has like the artistic license and the budget to be able to do some of these kind of passion things where he can really indulge. And you've got, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio, you have current A-list actors in it, where you look at a Pulp Fiction where he kind of had to piece together things, right? A great story. Or then you look at like Reservoir Dogs, which is really great. It's just such great dialogue, but it's like it's shot in like two different places, and it's all just kind of the mind of Quentin Tarantino.
Yep. Coming up, the stories that matter with Steve Bertrand from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here on WGN Radio. And thanks, Steve. It's Bill Leff. It's Dane Neal. Dane is sitting in for Wendy. Every Friday, we talk to Alexander Zeldman. He is the managing editor over at Decider.com and very, very knowledgeable about all things television. Hello, Alex. How are you?
Oh, I feel like I need to know everything.
You should know everything. Come on. You're the managing editor. It's your job to know everything about television. Please.
All right. I got it. Ask me anything. Stump me. This is a round of stuff.
You're like Jeopardy champion, Renaissance man. Right.
You can do this. I feel good for you. I have to tell you, I am a little late to the game on this, but I started watching, at everyone I know's insistence, I started watching the show Fleabag over on Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, is that good?
It's superb. It's one of the best television shows ever made. For those who haven't seen it, it's created by Phoebe Waller-Bridge, who also created Killing Eve over on BBC America. She is writing the new James Bond movie off of that. But this is based on her one-woman show, and she's fleshed it out with additional characters, obviously. But it's very winky at the camera, like she literally looks at the camera, but it has deep things to say about relationships and families and humans. It's also at 2 seasons, 6 episodes each that are all half an hour long. Very bingeable. You're going to slam through all of them, and at the end, you're going to be dying for more. But there is no more at the current time.
You know what's interesting is other television shows have used that idea of, I'm a character in the show, but I'm going to talk to you, the viewer. We've seen it on The Office. We've seen it on Modern Family. We've seen it on Parks and Recreation. But she does it in a way that is so original, and it just works. Every episode is just so funny and so great.
The way that she sets it up, and this, I was lucky enough to snag a ticket when she did her one-person show version of it here in New York, is she makes the audience complicit in it. Like, they are actually a character versus something like Saved by the Bell, where it's just kind of winking and talking to the audience and narrating. This is, it becomes part of her character that she needs this outside influence, us, the audience, to be there for her as her rope, because she is very quickly spinning out of control. So it's a fascinating experience as a viewer, particularly in the second season when they start to twist things and tweak that format a little bit, where it's very exciting. I highly recommend, particularly over the long weekend, take a little time and watch it on Prime Video if you haven't already.
Yeah, it goes by very, very quickly. Now, tell me this, Alex, because this is what I read, but I'm not sure if this is accurate. In England, it's just on the regular BBC. It's just part of your regular television that show airs, because I don't think they could do that yet here in the United States. There's too much stuff that goes on that I think your regular TV viewer would just go, oh, that shouldn't be on regular TV. That should be on special TV. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think it's more of an HBO-style show or even FX or something like that. It's not like there's a lot of nudity necessarily, but there is a lot of cursing, there's sexual content, there's drinking. But yeah, over in England, it's state-sponsored TV. They're much more liberal about that sort of thing. And you can have it airing week to week like that, as they did with Fleabag, versus here where it all ends up as a Prime Video original.
Yeah, yep. All right, let's talk about some of the shows that we need to know about, stuff coming up. Number one is Dark Crystal. This is the movie that was a Jim Henson creation, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, back in the 80s, Jim Henson launched an original fantasy property called The Dark Crystal. I can tell you, having watched it many times as a kid, it is gave me a headache a lot of times.
Yeah.
It was very intense, yeah. Very serious, but it was all puppets. It was all very dark and disturbing. And now it's back as a miniseries on Netflix called The Dark Crystal, Age of Resistance. It's on the service today. They worked very heavily with Frank Oz and the Jim Henson Company to reproduce the puppets and flesh out this enormous fantasy world. The voices are an all-star cast. You've got Taron Egerton, Natalie Emanuel, Mark Hamill, Andy Samberg, Simon Pegg, Keegan-Michael Key, Lena Bonham Carter. I could go on and on and on and on.
Impressive.
But it's stunning. I will tell you, again, as somebody who as a kid was like, oh, I'm having a little hard time watching this, even though I appreciate it, the series is very much the same way, where it's a hard fantasy. It's very serious pretty much throughout. But the feat of creating these worlds, and they did actually physically create the worlds, there's very spotty CGI, but really not a lot. But it's puppets. When the puppets fight, they're just throwing puppets at each other. It's incredible. Like, it is a stunning achievement of television. Mm-hmm. So if you have any interest in puppets, if you're a fan of Jim Henson back in the day, very mm-hmm. worth checking out.
Alex, you think about this. Is it part of the romantic attachment with history and puppets and all that kind of stuff? Because I'm curious why they would bother to go ahead and mm-hmm. include them with everything that you can do with special effects, you know, these days in CGI. And we saw, you know, Lion King and all that kind of stuff, and you saw with Team America World Police, you know, just kind of a foray into the marionette, right? Mm-hmm. Which is in the puppet family if you do the 23andMe. Is that something that, where there's a reason, is there like a puppet fandom or community that's really calling out for more puppet based entertainment?
There's two answers to that. I think the first one is yes, there is a devoted Henson fan base of the Muppets. It's very big online and in person. People love these things. They're very nostalgic for it, as you mentioned. So there's certainly that, and I think they're banking on a lot of that. But the other thing I can tell you, as somebody who doesn't necessarily have nostalgia for The Dark Crystal, I was much more a fan of a lot of the other Henson stuff than The Dark Crystal. Watching this in the age of CGI, there's a palpable difference between, say, watching Thanos in the Avengers movies, who's all CGI creation, versus on screen these puppets who, you know, they're flapping their mouths, right? Like, it doesn't look like it's real, but there's something about it that feels better and feels more real about watching the puppets in The Dark Crystal than there does watching these digital creations on screen. The light just hits it in a very different way, and it inhabits the space on your screen in a very different way. So, again, I grew up in the age of puppets, so that might be that nostalgia working on me, but it just feels more real than a lot of the digital creations that people are.
There is the gold age, the bronze age, and the age of puppets, the one that you just referred to.
And Alex, you mentioned some of the stars that are aligned for this and being a big part of it, and some of the biggest stars of the puppet world. Is there any thought, or is there any kind of cameos from some of our favorite kind of celebrity puppets from the, you know, maybe a Fozzie Bear in as a totally different character, right? Or maybe a Kermit or something like that as an homage to the history?
No, there's nothing like that, because it takes place on this other planet called Thra, and there's all these different characters called Elflings and Skeksis and everything that are all in this deep mythology. It's very much its own thing, so you're not going to see any of the Muppets show up. However, one interesting thing that I thought from behind the scenes is they actually brought back the original puppeteers who worked on the Dark Crystal to work on this one.
That's cool.
Including, if you remember the Labyrinth movie that Jim Henson did, the little baby Toby, his dad, Brian Froud, is a puppeteer. The baby Toby grew up, became a puppeteer himself, and his whole family worked on this new Dark Crystal.
Oh, that's
series.
Cool. That's excellent.
So you won't see him, but you'll see his hand inside the puppet's back.
One other quick question about Dark Crystal, Age of Resistance. Do you need to have seen the original Dark Crystal to enjoy this, or is it not important?
Absolutely not important at all. This is a prequel series, so it does help to know, this is a bit of a spoiler, but when they, in the movie The Dark Crystal, there are only two of these heroic Gelflings alive. The rest of the race is completely wiped out. So when you're watching this series, there's hundreds of thousands of them, so clearly something happened between this series and that, and it's very bad. So when you're watching the series, you can kind of know, okay, the heroes probably don't win. But other than that, it goes very deep into the mythology. It has a very Lord of the Rings-style opening where it lays out how everything works, and that's really all you need.
Excellent. Alexander Zelbin is here, the managing editor of Decider.com. Decider.com, that's the website to visit if you have any love of television. We'll pick this up in just a little bit. Oh, questions and comments, 312-981-7200 is the way to go. It's Bill and Dane in for Wendy on WGN. It's Bill Leff and Dane Neal. Dane is sitting in for Wendy. Alexander Zelbin is our guest. Alexander is the managing editor of Decider.com. We're going to get to some of your questions. I got a lot of text questions for you, Alex. But first, Carnival Row. This is the Orlando Bloom, Cara Delevingne show. What do we need to know about it?
Sure. This drops on Prime Video today. It actually dropped a little early last night. But this is a completely new fantasy property. It's a little steampunk. It's definitely for adults. There's a lot of fairy and fantasy creature sex going on in it. But ostensibly, it's about Orlando Bloom and Cara Delevingne's characters investigating a series of Jack the Ripper-style murders in this city where fantasy creatures and regular humans live side by side. It's kind of saying things a little bit about a refugee crisis, but it's not really tied to any particular place or time or anything like that. I will tell you, having watched the whole series, it's a bit of a mess. It's definitely much lighter fantasy than The Dark Crystal, which we were talking about earlier, but I really couldn't stop watching it. It's a melange of Game of Thrones stuff and fantasy cliches, but it's occasionally fun. There's occasionally good action in it. Don't look for something particularly deep or anything like that, but in terms of a brand new fantasy world, it's a good time.
Okay, sounds good. And again, that's called Carnival Row, and it's dropping on Amazon today, correct?
Mm-hmm, yeah. That's correct.
What do you make of this? You know, Disney has this this new platform on where it's like a pay-per-view station, but it's all Disney. They just announced that on that station there will be no R-rated content. Is that a good move or a bad move?
I think that's a very Disney move is what it is. I believe you're talking about Disney Plus, which is the new streaming platform that's launching on November 12th. And that's the Disney company, you know. They don't really release R-rated movies very typically. They're aiming for families. Right now, they actually own two streaming platforms. They own Hulu and also Disney Plus, the new one they're launching. And Disney Plus is going to be home to all of the Star Wars movies and TV shows. It's going to be home to a lot of the Marvel stuff, home to a lot of things like High School Musical, and they're doing a reboot of Lady and the Tramp. So I think the move there is smart, because if you have kids going into this app, you don't want them suddenly coming on an R-rated movie when they're browsing through High School Musical or something like that. It makes it a little more focused. It makes it more mainstream. And frankly, from a movie perspective, if you look at the top movies across the board, they're pretty much all PG-13. So aiming for that, I think, is a smart business decision. No, I was just going to say the flip side of it is that they also own Hulu, and that's a place where if they really want to put R-rated content, they'll probably put it on there, because that's home to a variety of different genres.
Disney's always been very savvy about that. They've always known, you know, how to market their product in terms of, we're Disney, we're family. But then they also have, like, remember when they came up with Touchstone Pictures, where it was Disney, but it was more adult Disney, more PG, harder PG-13 or R-rated Disney?
Yeah, I think that's changed a little bit. You know, they recently bought Fox, so a lot of that is still in flux, but it certainly looks like Fox could take that Touchstone place if that's really the route they want to go. But as for right now, again, if you look at the top TV shows, you look at the top movies, all of it is Disney stuff. They've been insanely popular this year and last year in particular, and the year isn't even over. They haven't released Frozen 2 yet. They haven't released the last Star Wars movie yet. So they're dominating with these things that are very squarely aiming for the PG-13 demographic. So they could make, you know, 50 Touchstone-style movies and maybe make a fraction of what they make with one Marvel movie. So why not go for the Marvel movie?
Part of the things that they do is obviously they've got their kind of indigenous properties and characters, and it's unlimited what they can do with that. And I think if you're looking at the kind of the baseline of what happens at Disney, it's success and profitability. And when you have some of these other kind of franchises out there, they just go up and snap them up and buy them. Your thoughts on that as far as sort of this consolidation of really what it is that we're seeing in a lot of these very successful big budget movies is it's all got sort of that Disney perspective. They've adjusted it a little bit for different demographics, but do you think that's a good thing, or should it be more broken up, like with independent kind of groups kind of coming up with the entertainment?
Well, listen, I think ultimately you would have to say that, yes, it should be broken up if you like art and you like creative things. I go see every Marvel movie. I love them. I go see every Star Wars movie. I love them. They're great. They're fantastic. I'm not saying anything bad about them whatsoever. But if you look at what Disney's first move was when they bought Fox, is they canceled some of the weirder, more interesting projects that were coming out of it. There's a comic that I absolutely dearly love called Mouse Guard, which is all about these little mice, but in this very Lord of the Rings style world where they go on adventures and fight, and it's serious, but it's family friendly. Fox was adapting it for a movie. That's one of the first things Disney just straight up killed. They were like, no, we're not going to do that. Nobody knows what that is. That's not going to work. Maybe it would have worked. Maybe it would have launched something new, but we don't know. And ultimately, like you were saying, Disney is not going to reward creative risks in the same way. Maybe they'll go 25%, 50% on a creative risk and say something like what Marvel did a couple of years ago when they were releasing Guardians of the Galaxy. Everybody thought, okay, you've done these superhero movies, but bringing in a talking raccoon and a talking tree, I don't know if that's going to work. But at the same time, it's in the Marvel universe. They were building it as part of this epic film cycle. So it already had this small guarantee of, okay, people are going to come into the theater. So without that, you miss those chances. You miss those bold ideas coming out in cinema. So, yes, ultimately, there should always be smaller companies, more chances for people to put out their art. But frankly, not, you know, to wrap up this very lengthy monologue that I'm having right now, that's part of the democratization of the internet, I think, is that if Disney is not going to allow that in movie theaters, people are going to make their art and put it other places.
Oh, interesting.
And the people who, yeah, and the people who want to find it are going to track those things down.
Very good, very good. We talked a little bit on the show the other day about Saturday Night Live's announcement that Leslie Jones is leaving the show, which surprised a lot of people, myself included. I didn't see that coming. But here's my question, Alex. Alec Baldwin has said he's done playing Donald Trump on Saturday Night Live. Is that true? And if it is true, who is going to play Donald Trump on Saturday Night Live?
I will believe it when I see it. He has said several times, well, that's it. I'm done with playing Trump. I'm sick of playing Trump. I don't know why they keep making me play Trump. And then he just shows up and plays Trump again.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Maybe he's serious this time. Maybe. But I would be stunned if the next season does not open up with Alec Baldwin on stage as Trump,
yeah,
regardless of what he's publicly saying.
There's a bunch of texts from people who want to know about their favorite shows and if they're coming back, and if so, when they're coming back. Let me just give a couple to you. Number one is Dead to Me. That's the Christina Applegate show from last season. They announced as soon as they ran it that there's going to be a second season. Do we know when it'll be?
We don't know when it'll be yet, just because Netflix is only releases the release dates about a month in advance, but there's definitely going to be a second season of it. It got Emmy nominations. It was a big hit, so we're definitely going to see more of that, and hopefully for a long time.
Another texter wants to know about another season of Ozark. That's happening, but we don't know when either, right?
That's true, but I would think probably sooner rather than later. They've been filming that one for a while, and it's been about a year at this point since the last season was released. So this is not definite by any means, but I would be shocked if we don't see it before the end of the year.
773, a texter in 773 says, I have heard that there's going to be a reboot of Lost. Is that true? Do you know if that's true or not?
Right now, I would say that's not true. That's been something that's bumped around for a very long time. In fact, when Damon Lindelof and Carlton Cuse, who are the showrunners on Lost, were giving interviews for the finale, they said, listen, we're finishing up the story we tell, but this is such a popular show, somebody's going to reboot it at some point. So it's not happening yet. there's no serious plans or anything like that. But at least according to them, they're open to the idea of somebody else just taking over and running with it. Whether ABC wants to do that at the current time is certainly a big question.
What's the show, though? There's some preview that I saw the other day for some show where there is a plane crash and there's some girl that mysteriously shows up by the plane crash. And do you know what I'm talking about? I don't know what that show is, but I just saw the preview the other day.
Well, that sounds like a million different shows on TV. Yeah. Maybe Manifest. There is
no,
Manifest.
Not Manifest, because that was on last year. But this is a new one with the girl that was on Fargo in the first season.
Gosh.
You know what that is?
I don't know. There is a I don't know if this is what you're talking about, but there is a Netflix show called The Island that is coming up pretty soon. A preview just dropped for that. And that's about a bunch of kids who get stranded on an island, and there may be some supernatural stuff going on. And that looks maybe a little bad, but sort of in a fun, cheesy Netflix way.
So if you're putting together a show, you want to either have a plane crash or an island or even both.
Teens with superpowers.
Yeah, that's always good. All right.
I think I know what you're talking about. Are you talking about Emergence, the show with Alison Tolman?
That's the one. That's the one.
Yeah, that's premiering on ABC on September 24th. And, I mean, to your point, ABC has been trying to remake Lost without remaking Lost for years at this point. So as far as I've heard, though, Emergence is very good. So if you are looking for something that has those mystery elements, and certainly Alison Tolman is superb as an actress, that's one you can check out when it premieres.
One other thing, Alex. A couple weeks ago, you talked about a show that was starting on HBO called The Righteous Gemstone. So I've watched the first two episodes. I love it. I don't want to give too much away, but here's how you sold it to me. If you like Danny McBride, this is the show for you. I always like him, and he's outdoing himself on this one.
Yeah, and it only gets crazier from here. If you are interested in checking it out, and you do have an HBO subscription, I would urge you to head to HBO Now or HBO Go tonight, maybe. They're actually putting up their whole Sunday night lineup early on the streaming services. It's still going to premiere on air at the regular time, but including The Righteous Gemstones, that's going to be there, I believe, at 9 o'clock tonight. So you can just kind of check it out, binge the first couple of episodes, get into it, and talking to my reviewer who's been working on it, she said that it's even wilder this week than it was the past couple of weeks.
The storyline, very, very quickly, it's a family of televangelists led by John Goodman, but Danny McBride and Adam Devine are two of the brothers. And there was a surprise. I won't give too much away here. There's a surprise in last week's episode that I always like to think I know what's coming, and this one took me by surprise. Very, very much so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's great. It's definitely not enough people are watching at this point, and I think many more people should.
I urge you, if you're a fan of quirky, offbeat comedy, it's a great show. It's The Righteous Gemstones on HBO. Alex, fun to talk to you. We really appreciate you being here. I hope you have a great week, and we'll talk to you a week from today.
Yeah, you too. Thanks so much.
That's Alexander Zalbin. He's the managing editor of Decider.com. Thanks, Dave. It's Bill Leff. It's Dane Neal. Dane is sitting in for Wendy. Wendy will return on Tuesday after the holiday. On the phone with us right now, Tony Award winner, David Cromer. David, do you ever get tired of hearing that?
Never. Never. How many times are you going to say it over the course of the broadcast?
I'm going to shoot. The over and under is 10.
I got to say it twice, too.
Say it, Dane. Say it. It's fun to say.
Tony Award winning David Cromer.
When you enter into a room, you should have somebody announce you that way. Why don't you?
I do. I do. Sometimes you have to send someone in. Sometimes you have to hire someone.
Right. That's all right.
Spontaneously.
That still counts.
That's nice.
A room should be aware that a Tony Award winner is about to enter into it. Everyone should know that. Here's the backstory for people who don't know. And we had David. Oh, go on. I'm sorry.
Oh, nothing I was going to say.
What were you saying, Tony Award winning David Cromer?
When I won the Tony Award,
yes.
I believe the Earth stood still. I don't know. I got nothing. I got no bet.
David and I went to college together. Yeah. We were attending Columbia College together, and I used to say to him all the time, "You're going to win one of those Tony Awards," and David would say, "I know.
It's
just a matter of time. I know I'm going to win one." And then you won it for the band visit, and that's coming to Chicago this week, correct?
It is. Yes, it starts on Tuesday at the Cadillac Palace. And That's great, because, you know, I'm from Chicago and born and raised and spent most of my career there and did storefront theater and off-loop theater and, you know, and that's where I made my bones, you know, and that's where I worked and the kind of work I did, and it shaped me. I was there till I was in my early 40s. So the idea of coming in, like, with Broadway Chicago in, like, a musical that's going to be at the Cadillac Palace is completely absurd to me and really strange. And unfortunately, I can't even be there.
Why?
Because I'm doing another show. It's a nightmare. I was so excited. Like, I thought I was very excited to be home and to be there and to go to opening.
Yes.
And I had a bunch of people going. I'm doing another play and will be in tech. I'm doing another play in New York on Broadway, and we'll be in tech rehearsals, and I just can't get away.
Oh, that's disappointing. That's why they should clone you, David. I've been saying that for years. You got to start with David Cromer. Clone David Cromer, I say. Yeah. He's a Tony Award winner.
Hashtag. Yep. That's a hashtag. Hashtag clone.
It'll happen.
Tony Award winner David Cromer. That's a long, unwieldy hashtag.
No, it is.
Will the Tony be on site?
Yeah, you got to bring the Tony out at least.
Yeah. God. God, I know.
How will the production, is the production different in any way other than the venue being a different place, David? How does the production differ from when it was in New York?
Some of the visuals have been expanded. We wanted to make a gesture towards bigger spaces and people who are going to be possibly a little farther away from the stage. We've expanded some of the projections and some of the choreography. And also it's in its form, but it's, the nature of the music, okay, so there are live musicians on stage.
Yes.
Who are characters in the play. They're the band, and then the band who is visiting, and they also, like, have these scenes where they kind of play, and it's, the music is structured, but the music is also built in a way where the musicians can improvise and jam with each other, and these guys are terrific together. So first of all, the music's kind of different every night, especially the live onstage stuff.
Mm-hmm.
is watching these kind of brilliant, brilliant, brilliant world-class musicians and violinists and oud players and these darbuka players, which is this amazing Middle Eastern drum that just, like, rings out. It's such a beautiful, expressive sound, and they just jam a couple of times during the show every night, so that's really beautiful. And it's an all-new cast. There's a few people who worked on it on Broadway, but there's an all-new cast, and they are just new humans, and so the goal when we were rehearsing it was to let them be, you know, sort of as truly who they are. So the show feels, it's the same story, but it's, like, it's different. It's populated by different people. I don't know if it's going to matter to people who hadn't seen it in New York, but I'm actually in Greenville. We're here in Greenville, South Carolina now. On tour, I
the Broadway of the South. I always call Greenville the Broadway of the South.
Recognize Broadway of the South.
Tell the story, David, for people who don't
know.
For people who don't know the story of the band's visit, just give a little synopsis of what the show's about.
Sure. It pretends it's telling a very simple, ordinary story, just about a mistake in directions. An Egyptian orchestra that is supposed to play a concert in Israel, through a mistake, a misunderstanding, a slip of language, gets sent to the wrong town. And instead of being in this sort of bustling metropolis called Petah Tikva, where they're going to play this concert at a cultural center, they're stuck in this desert backwater called Beit HaTikva. And they're stuck there for the night. And and Egyptians and Israelis do not traditionally get along, and this was at a period of cultural exchange in the 90s. And they are sort of stuck with these people, and the townspeople have no choice but to just take them in and take care of them for the night until they can leave the next day. And because of that, they all just start to spend time together and start to talk and struggle through language. They all have a language barrier. They all speak broken English because that's the only common language they have. And through music and food and hope, and hopes and disappointments and you know, their dreams, they just kind of all help each other.
Mm-hmm.
They all get each other unstuck from the place they're stuck in their lives. So simply by a little accident and a little good graces, everyone is kind of enriched.
Don't you, David, don't you...
I never tell the story. I never tell the story well, Bill.
No, it's you sold it. Look at the tickets now. We're just hearing it sold out now. Everybody's just saying there's no more tickets available.
Mission accomplished.
Cadillac Theater can find you some tickets. Call them.
Give them another Tony.
But don't you love when you hear a story that's so original, that's got to really spark you to say, this is something that I don't think I've heard before. I got to jump in and work on this, right?
Yeah, yeah. It wasn't driven by a lot of fake plot things. It was merely just, it's an accidental encounter. It's a surprise that life can give you. You know, listen, I was at a place in my life where I was saying, you know, I don't think that anything really, really exciting is going to happen anymore. You know, like emotionally, or I'm not going to meet a bunch of amazing people, or there isn't going to be some giant thing. Even if I get a good job, even if I get an award or I win it, I'm just not going to be, it's not going to be like it was, that when life brought you new things. And I was fine with that. I was late middle age, and then you never know. And then something will just happen. Now, that happens to the characters in this show. It happened to me when this play fell in my lap. The show fell in my lap. I just got a call saying, hey, you know, and it mentioned the composer who I love, the book writer who I love, the film that I hadn't seen, but I watched it and I loved it. It's based on this beautiful, beautiful Israeli film of the same name called The Band's Visit. Yes, it was thrilling, and it was right in my wheelhouse. Like, I went like, oh, this is actually something I could do without screwing it up.
We're talking with David Cromer. I know what you're saying. Not the Tony Award-winning David Cromer.
Oh,
yes, the Tony Award-winning David Cromer. Absolutely. Where do you keep your Tony Award, David, and how often do you look at it?
I forget to look at it a lot.
Do you?
I once in a while, I go, it's like on a shelf in the living room, and I kind of go like, I should go over and look at that once in a while.
Yes.
You remember Anna Shapiro?
Very much so. Yep.
Anna Shapiro is the artistic director of Steppenwolf Theater. And we all went to school together, and she has a Tony as well, and we were doing a press thing, and she said, I don't even know where my Tony is. And I said, you don't know where it is?
Right.
And I said, you don't know where it is? And she goes, yeah, no, I don't even know where it is. And I said, well, mine is on a shelf. It's with a lot of other tchotchkes, but I know where. Okay, you win. You're cooler than I am. She always wins.
But I don't know what else you could put on that shelf.
I know where your Tony is.
David, what could you put on a shelf with a Tony Award that deserves its place next to a Tony Award? That's impossible.
I didn't put it on a plinth. You know what I mean?
I think a picture
should be its own. It should be its own room,
right?
No, it should, or just maybe a picture of yourself with the Tony,
right?
Receiving it
right next to it. Yes, absolutely. Yes. You know what I love about your Facebook page, by the way? On your Facebook page, it's a little bit of everything. Sometimes there will be political musings or something about yourself, some self awareness. But the one that got me the most was how excited you were when Stacy Keach got his own star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
Oh my God, Sergeant Spedenko!
Yes, from Up in Smoke. Yes. Why were you so excited? And I, David, believe me, no one gets more excited over silly things than me. But I never saw you more jazzed about anything than Stacy Keach getting a star on the Walk of Fame. What happened there?
Well, first of all, you know, I would like to pretend that I'm a serious theater artist, and I saw him play King Lear at the Goodman.
Oh.
But he's Sergeant Spedenko from Up in Smoke, which I watched with my roommates in college 100 times. And I won't suggest that there was any marijuana involved,
right? But
there was a lot of marijuana involved.
Right.
You know, he's Sergeant Spedenko. And that was like, that was before the internet. That was before you could just watch a clip on YouTube. That was when you really had to work to learn all those scenes, all those Python sketches and all of that stuff to, you know, work to be able to quote it all the time. And we just quoted Sergeant Spedenko all the time. And I just remember thinking, like, that's like a real serious actor playing this insane part in this movie.
Yes. Yes.
So that's why. Because he was like a serious, important actor who went, I'm going to play Sergeant Spedenko.
Good for him.
Teaching John's Up in Smoke. And I'm going to be amazing.
Sometimes you'll also post pictures of yourself on Facebook with our top actors and actresses of today, but to you, you seem very nonplussed by the fact that you're standing next to very famous people. You know what I mean, right?
Yeah, it's a lot of work to act that. That's just because It's a lot of work to pretend I'm not excited about meeting you.
Who have you worked with, David, in the last couple of years?
The fact that I post the pictures means I'm thrilled about it.
Of course.
It's the worst kind of humble bragging. Like, what? It's just Elaine Stritch.
That's big. That's very, very big. Who have you not worked with yet? If you could work with anybody in show business who's still alive, who would that person be?
Still alive.
Still alive.
That's the key to this. Still alive. You can't say Burt Lahr. That's unacceptable.
Really? You'd go Lahr? I'd go Jack Haley.
All right.
He's the heart and soul of that.
No, you're right. You're right.
Oh, boy. I better have a good Anthony Hopkins would be
Anthony ridiculous. Hopkins.
Wow. Yeah.
Wouldn't
Anthony
that be
Hopkins
nice?
Would be ridiculous. Yeah.
Would you be able?
But I'm so scared he'd be mean to me.
What? No, why do you say that? He doesn't seem like somebody who'd be mean to you.
Doesn't he seem mean? He seems mean.
Well, he was Hannibal Lecter, but that was just a character he was playing. He wasn't really eating people.
He's
you
not
know that.
Mean to eat people.
Sustenance. He's just trying to stay alive.
These people aren't going to eat themselves.
Right. He's very practical. David, the last time you were up in studio with us a couple months ago, you talked about going to visit your mom, and you said that there are pluses and minuses to visiting your mom. Was it a pleasant experience?
It was a very pleasant experience. My mother is 89 years old. She still drives a car. She exercises every day. She got like 4 hobbies and 3 volunteer jobs. She's doing great. She's doing great.
How proud of you? Yeah. She's got to be over the moon proud of you, right?
Yes, but my mother is very practical about pride. We like to be understated in our family about that sort of thing.
Yeah.
She said there's a great one where a bunch of really great, you know, look, I've had a bunch of great years and a bunch of really great things were happening. I was talking to her about it and she was saying, "Davey, that's so great. It's so great." And she was just really expressing it. And I said, "Yeah, I know." And I had to say the thing we say in our family, which is the self-deprecating thing, which is like, "Yeah, I know. Look, it's all gonna go away tomorrow and that'll be fine." And she goes, "Oh, I'm so glad to hear you say that, because you can't count on these things. They go away, and that's fine. That's great. It won't last forever. That's important to remember."
David, about a year ago, I read Norman Lear's book. Norman Lear, for people who don't know, is the creator of so many great television shows, All in the Family, Maude, The Jeffersons, the list goes on and on. So he was telling the story about how at one point, they contacted him, the Television Academy, to say, "We want to give you a Lifetime Achievement Award. We're going to give you one and Lucille Ball one." So he said he called his mom and he told his mom this, that the TV Academy is going to give him the Lifetime Achievement Award in comedy. And he said, "Once I said it, there was 30 seconds of silence." And then his mom said over the phone, "Well, if that's what they want to do."
There's Albert Brooks said, like, you know, the first time he was on The Tonight Show, he called his mom, and he said, "I'm going to be on The Tonight Show." And she said, This is not the regular Tonight Show, right? This is like a test, like a local version that's on before the regular Tonight Show."
Oh, that's so sad.
Yeah.
When you're back in Chicago, David, what's the one thing that you do or place that you visit that says, "I'm home, I'm back in Chicago"? What is it?
I eat at JB Alberto's. I go to the beach in Rogers Park. I always want to make sure I go to the beach in Rogers Park. I go to like Columbia Beach.
Mm-hmm.
There's just, you walk down Columbia. Tom Bell used to live at the end of that block.
Mm-hmm.
My friend Tom Bell used to live at the end of that block, and I would go to his house and right at the end of Columbia Beach is beautiful. And there's a little spot that enters onto the beach, and that feels purely Chicago to me. And I get JB Alberto's pizza. I used to get Eduardo's, but they don't have it anymore.
Yeah.
So I go to JB Alberto's in Rogers Park, get a slice.
Mm.
And
that's when you know you're home.
I can think of, you know, yeah, a lot of the places are gone now. I like to walk around the Lakeview area. I go downtown. I always end up downtown by school, honestly, because I generally go and visit. I used to go visit Sheldon before he passed.
Yeah.
And
But I still go, and I see Brian and Stephanie Shaw and our friends there. So I always go down to Columbia.
Oh, nice. Very nice.
You know, the L downtown does it for me, too.
Yeah, of course.
Taking the red line down. Is it the red line still? Is that what it's called?
Yeah. Yep. That's what it's called.
Yeah.
David showed them.
I have like $300 in those cards. I keep forget every time I come to Chicago. I fill up my card and I keep forgetting to bring it. So I'm like $500 in train fare.
The city is doing so well off of just you, David. It's insane. That's we have a surplus plan. Of cash because of you.
It's time to give back. I like to give back, you know.
David Cromer's show, The Band's Visit, is going to be playing at the Cadillac Palace Theater. The show starts Tuesday. That's this Tuesday, September 3rd, and it runs through Sunday, September 15th. Insanely great reviews. And, David, I believe you won a Tony Award. Am I reading that right for your work in there, for your directorial work?
I don't know.
Whatever.
And no matter what your mom says, the Tony is forever.
The Tony's forever.
Thanks for having me.
David, it's fun to talk to you. I say this every time I talk to you, but I mean it. I'm so proud of you and what you've achieved. So keep up the great work, okay?
I'm proud of you.
Thank you.
You did okay.
And everybody's doing all right. Thanks, David. Have a great weekend. Good luck.
Bye.
That's David Cromer, you guys. Tony Award winning David Cromer, it says here on my sheet.
That's high praise. That's
between
awesome.
The three of us, Dane, you and I and David, we've won a Tony Award.
Well, Bill, it was great. And for the listeners, you extended the opportunity. Any college friend of mine that had also won a Tony was also welcome to join the conversation.
Right. Absolutely. Call us now. We'll take a break and then turn things over to the Wintrust Business Lunch in just a bit. It's Bill and Dane Infuendi on WGN.